And today is Wednesday, August 5th, 2026. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, we appreciate your viewership here on the Eastman Financial Report, as well as throughout the day on worldviewtube.com. And of course, you can listen to us at Worldview Radio as well. As you know, we are a Christian broadcasting network, and it's our ministry, our mission, our passion, and our goal to bring to the great marketplace of ideas the news and information of the day from a Christian perspective. And that's what we've been doing here at this network since 2006. And of course, we walk in the footsteps of the apostles 2,000 years ago who went about the Middle East spreading the good news of the gospel. And I point out, when they spread that good news, they weren't charging an admission fee or a paywall or a subscription. They were giving that gift freely given, and of course, at great personal risk to themselves. Well, here we are 2,000 years later, going forth and making disciples of all nations, continuing in that ministerial path. And we are here broadcasting from a Christian perspective, and that's what we do and have been doing since 2006 and plan to continue doing until the second coming. So it is truly our privilege to be here in this space, in that great marketplace of ideas from the Christian perspective. Now, if you'd like to help us in that ministry, you can do that. And the easiest way is to go to worldviewfoundation.com. If you type that into your browser, worldviewfoundation.com, and it'll take you to our foundation website, and you can make a donation, which is very helpful to this ministry. It adds to our revenue, and it keeps us positive, bottom line positive. And that's how we are able to broadcast our content free of charge. You're not paying a paywall to watch the Eastman Financial Report or any of the programming you see throughout the day. Again, it's a gift freely given. But free doesn't mean there isn't cost involved. And if you can help us in covering those costs by making a donation, that would be a very wonderful thing. You can sign up for a one-time donation, or you can sign up for our monthly plan. And if you sign up for the monthly plan, it has the added benefit of flattening our revenue costs a little bit, a revenue curve, so we can better match cost to revenue. And that's what keeps our bottom line positive. So donations are very important. And of course, we have been operating this ministry as a beneficiary of the foundation for a very long time. And we certainly intend to continue. And with your help, we can do that. There's a second way you can help this ministry, and that is to do business with the vendors you see advertising throughout the day on our network. As you know, we're not a big commercial broadcast network, and we don't sell blocks of advertising time. Rather, we find companies that we know and trust, and we partner with them. So when you purchase goods and services from them, a small portion of the proceeds comes back to us in the form of a sales commission, and that, again, enhances our revenue line and allows us to continue broadcasting for free. And we do some business with, we have partnered with some very great vendors. So the products you see throughout the day on the network are very much worth your attention, and certainly supporting those vendors is supporting the network, and it's win-win-win because you're getting great products and service, and the vendors are happy to be advertising here. And of course, the network gets a commission. So it's a wonderful way to support the ministry and add value to your purchasing dollar. The third way you can help the ministry, and this is also a really amazing way for you to help yourself, is to go to our Vault product and subscribe. If you type in worldviewtube.com/vault, type that into your browser, worldviewtube.com/vault. Here's the address in the bottom of the screen. You can go to the Vault page, and the Vault is an amazing collection of this ministry. As I said, we started broadcasting in 2006, and Brandon House has written over 16 books now, and he has had events, conferences, seminars around the country. All of that information is now digitized and lives in the Vault, along with the current broadcasts like the Eastman Financial Report reruns are all living in the Vault, and many of the programs that we develop throughout the day that you're seeing free of charge end up parked in the Vault. So if you wanted to go back to an episode and say, wait a minute, you know, he was talking about the GDP, I want to go back and see that, subscribe to the Vault, and it's right there at your fingertips. Now, you might say, wow, 30 years of material, that's a lot of material. How will I ever find that episode? Well, we have solved that problem by developing an amazing search engine tool. So when you go into the Vault and you want to search by topic, let's say you want to search about something about Iran or maybe oil prices, taxes, or maybe the Federal Reserve, or maybe a scriptural passage or a spiritual concept. You can put that in the search engine, and it brings it all right up for you. It's an amazing, amazing product. And we've also now added a Bible study inside the vault. If you go to the vault, we have the Book of Revelation as thoroughly analyzed and explained by Brandon House. You can go to the course, and you can pull it down line by line. It's an amazing Bible study tool, and it's just the first. Right now, the Book of Revelation is there, but eventually we'll get to all 66 books. Because this is really the future of ministry is digital, and it's just an amazing collection. So you think, wow, that sounds like something I should certainly buy for myself. How much is it? Well, it's amazingly inexpensive. If you sign up for our one-year plan, it's less than $8 a month. Now, I don't know about you, but in my town, I can't go out for one of those fancy cups of coffee for less than $8. Of course, you have to get the biscotti with it, you know. But the point is, for less than $8 a month, that's a real bargain. And if you're not sure and you want to just do the month to month, give it a try, it's less than $10 a month. So I know you can't buy lunch, and at least in my town, for $10. It's well worth the price to be part of the Vault community, because you're really integrating into the ministry. And as the Vault grows and membership in the Vault grows and our broadcast ministry grows, this is how we grow the church. And this is really the way to do it. So for that price, it's a real bargain. And keep in mind, we all know people in our lives who are struggling for whatever reason. There's maybe health problems or family problems, or maybe financial problems, job problems, career problems. People that you know and you love and you wish they weren't sad, but they are sad because life overwhelms. Giving them an $8 a month subscription to the Vault is a very spiritually uplifting thing. And if you want to help your friend, your neighbor, your relative, what a wonderful way to do it. You can take them out for coffee or lunch, but if you buy this, you know, spend the same $8 or $10 a month, they have monthly access, daily access, 24/7 access to the same spiritually uplifting content that you do. And again, it builds the ministry. So really, the Vault is something that if you're watching me today, you should subscribe to the Vault to help the network, more importantly, to serve yourself. So that's how you help us. That's how you keep us on the air. Make a donation. You do business with the vendors you see advertising on our network, and certainly subscribe to the Vault. You will not be sorry. It's an amazing product, and it truly is the digital future of ministry. To be online, searchable content, references, it's all there. You really should just check it out. It'll be well worth your time and money. Just subscribe, and you'll be happy. So, okay, let's talk about the Eastman Oil Report here, as this is morphing into. And I do want to note that usually it's Tieless Tuesday, but today's Wednesday, so I've forgotten my tie today. But that doesn't stop. As they say in the olden days, the show must go on, and necktie or not, it's still the same Dan Eastman talking about the same amazing economy that we live in, and let's keep going. So I want to talk about oil today. Of course, we've been watching with the news, you know, the missiles are flying, and this is going on, and that's going on. There are negotiations, and the Houthis are shooting at the Saudi ships farther up north in the Red Sea. Sounds like the typical chaos of the Middle East that we've all grown up with and come to really wish we could turn the whole thing off. And that's, of course, what President Trump is doing. He's trying to diminish the importance of the Middle East and defund this constant terrorism, constant war, constant bellum by taking their money away. And how do you take the money away in the Middle East? They have one source of revenue for the most part. Oil. So what do? You shift production to the Western Hemisphere and other places, and you starve Iran. And unfortunately, it's a little bit of a process to do that. But at the end of the day, the globe and the world will be a much more peaceful place as everybody plays together nicely in the sandbox, rather than having one section of the globe radically opposed to others for reasons that are not relevant to modern society. So what President Trump is doing is what no other president has had the courage to do, and we're basically rearranging the economics of the Middle East. That's why I talk about it. You know, this is not a political show. I very, very seldom comment on political issues, but when politics meets the economy, that's when it needs to be discussed. You know, back in the olden days, the federal government and its shenanigans and activities really never mattered to the mighty American economy. But as you look at more and more spending, public spending, dollar spending, it's becoming a bigger and bigger part of our GDP. It's amazing. It's well over 23% of all money transacting in our American GDP is now government money, federal, state, local, whatever. You know, when you think about it, the Soviet Union was at 100% and we're at 23%. You know, we're a quarter of the way there to a totally planned centralized economy. And that's not good. But what we are seeing as a result of that massive spending, and of course, it's led us to $40 trillion in national debt, which we will never pay back. There will be a realignment, but there aren't $40 trillion in existence to pay those bonds back. It'll just go forever. And the same thing with the $2.5 trillion annual deficit we're running. Those numbers were unheard of 10 years ago. They were even more unheard of in the 70s and back in the olden days when I was a graduate student in economics studying dismally the dismal science back in the early 80s. One of my folk heroes, of course, was David Stockman, the great professor and financial wizard and economist, who pointed out that this is not sustainable, that he was very, very concerned about the federal debt approaching $1 billion. And I thought, boy, $1 billion is a lot of money. A billion, that's with a B, not a T, but a B, okay? And of course, here we are today, and I read David's work from time to time on X and other forums, and he's still swinging away at for the wall there. But the point is we're now at $40 trillion in debt. And what it's doing, of course, is crowding out the economy. It's just, you know, if you want to sell as a corporation, you want to go into the debt market, or even a municipality, a county, a state, you want to sell some debt, build a bridge, whatever, you're competing for the same dollars that the federal government is competing for. And now you add the hyperscalers, you know, the guys with the big data, and they're all out there selling bonds, unbelievable amounts of bonds for private enterprise. And suddenly you realize that there's a lot more hunger for debt, for dollars by issuing debt than there are dollars to be had. And that creates a scarcity, of course. And that means you have to raise your interest rates to attract the dollars. You'll come to the higher yield. And of course, there's a risk component as well. But that's how this all plays out. And that's the economy we're looking at. So when we look at the oil business, it has a major impact on the U.S. Well, I want to do my daily duty here and read off the oil prices because it's a sad day in Midland and Odessa, Texas, in the Permian Basin. Oil is right now at $63 a barrel. That's down rather dramatically from yesterday, and yesterday's price wasn't much to write home about. $63 a barrel, and there are producers out in the West that are looking to lift a barrel at 58. So the margins have shrunk rather dramatically as the situation in the Persian Gulf continues to be the typical political bellum, but the oil industry has shifted because it's free enterprise, it's private enterprise. And when supply is constrained in one place at the Hormuz, it shifts elsewhere. Other people start making more, and it doesn't matter. They fill that void. When the supply curve suddenly drops, there's a price shock, but the supply curve will immediately pop back up to meet the demand because other producers will see an opportunity for profit, and that's what they do. And that's when I was talking about my friends in Midland and Odessa. You know, if you're in the oil production business and your business is drilling holes and pumping oil, you want to be drilling oil, well, at least pumping oil as fast as you can at $100 a barrel because you are making really good profit. I mean, you are making good money. And of course, you know, trees don't grow to the sky and nothing lasts forever. Well, neither did the oil boom of the of 2026. Looks like it's settling back down. And that's what filled the gap. Because if you look at how much oil America produces and exports, vast amounts of oil that we export, along with other countries, Mexico, Canada, I talk about them every day, into of course, Venezuela and Colombia and Bolivia, all the way up and down the ridge, you know, from Alaska all the way to the Patagonia, we're seeing oil production increasing. And along with Indonesia, places in Africa, even the Brent, you know, even King Charles's personal oil well up there is making money. Speaking of Brent, they're at 79, which is only $4 above West Texas right now. And of course, keep in mind, a couple of weeks ago, they were at $114. And my old King Charles was pumping as fast as he could pull that lever. But today, they're back down to 79, and that seems to be the market. We've been watching the Mexican number, and of course, the Mexican number was 80 yesterday at this point in time. Keep in mind, these are spot prices, so they go up and down all day long. But today, Mexico has dropped the full $10 to 70 because suddenly, for the good quality of the Mexican crude oil, oil is, there's a lot of it because the Mexicans too, not only King Charles is pumping away, but we have the Pemex, the Mexican government. I'm sure they're all busy over their lunch hour running around pumping oil out of the ground. But the point is, Mexican oil's dropped $10 in a day. And our dear friends in Canada, and again, I note looking out the window, I'm not seeing any smoke again today, which is very kind of them, but it's $63 a barrel. So the point is, with all the shooting going on, and one news story did catch my eye, when the Houthis, the dear antagonists of the Saudis, that's what happens when you don't take the whole peninsula. See, when you don't structure it right, you end up with people you wish weren't living on your southern border. But they're shooting at Saudi oil rigs farther north into the Red Sea, and I've talked about this. Of course, the Red Sea is on the west side of the Saudi Peninsula, and of course, the Gulf, the Arabian Gulf or the Persian Gulf, depending which side you're standing on, is on the east side. So the Saudis, they ran their pipe, the big gigantic, you know, 500, just very big miles of pipe, 500 plus miles of pipe, to Yanbu, which is a city in on the Red Sea and the Saudi city. And of course, there's a terminal there, and they load the boats, and they just basically bypass the Hormuz. They're good to go, and they're trying to ship 7 million barrels a day out of Yanbu into the global market. Well, the Houthis figured that out, and they start shooting at the boats. That can cause a supply problem, because the 7 million barrels from Saud that comes into the Red Sea will certainly add to the global supply. And if that starts to restrict, then you'll have a supply drop, price go up until other suppliers meet that deficit. And of course, they start filling contracts. And oil is sold on long-term contracts. It's not sold spot. I mean, we have spot pricing, but oil is sold for delivery as needed and as contracted. So it takes the Saudi government out of the market for a bit of time as other suppliers fill that gap, and it hurts their economy. So, of course, they're trying to go north. Well, gee, it seems like that's another Gulf, except I've talked at length about the Suez Canal and the friends of the British and the French and the Israelis thinking they were going to pull a fast one back in the 1950s, and they didn't. But the Suez Canal is very important because oil going north on the Red Sea hits the canal, through the canal, into the Mediterranean Sea, and then, of course, into the ports of Europe, whereupon the Europeans are eager to take not only the crude oil, but the liquefied natural gas. So as the Houthis continue to pester the Saudis in the Red Sea, that is causing some supply issues. But the interesting thing is, it didn't move the needle, and we're seeing prices coming down. And every time things cool down in the Iranian situation, the prices are trending lower. They hit a new low. And keep in mind, when this whole thing started, West Texas was trading at about $63, $62, $61 a barrel. So we're right back to where the pricing was before the whole war started. And that's what tells you that the oil business is adjusting and changing. Now, I've got to take a break here. I'll come back, and I want to talk about the Cushing and Strategic Petroleum Reserve because it's an important story. But I'll be right back. Thanks.
Introducing Worldview Tube Vault. Over 35 years of radio broadcasts, television programs, documentaries, and ebooks. Plus, Worldviewpedia, our powerful search engine for instant worldview and Bible research. Join for as little as $7.99 a month. And now, Vault members get something brand new, courses. Our very first course is here, The Book of Revelation with Brannon House. 53 in-depth lessons, complete with overview quizzes, walking you verse by verse through one of the most important books in Scripture. Getting started is simple. Go to worldviewtube.com/vault and join today. Already a member? Visit worldviewtube.com, click the person icon in the top right, and log in. Then hover over Vault in the menu and select Courses. That's it. You're in. Join WorldviewTube Vault today at worldviewtube.com/vault.
Okay, I'm back. Let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about the stories circulating about the Cushing and Strategic Petroleum Reserve reserves being drained. And this is picking up steam because it's an interesting thing. When this Iranian war started, there were projections that oil would go to $150, $200 a barrel. And, you know, people were going nuts thinking gasoline would be $8 a gallon. And if you understand the oil business, this and you understand spot pricing and the NYMEX contract pricing for future delivery, which I've talked about. If you go to the Eastman Financial Report reruns and listen to these weeks of lecture, you'll realize that those were scare tactics primarily to undermine President Trump's efforts in Iran. And what better way to undermine public support of President Trump than to scare everybody into thinking gasoline will be $8 a gallon? Well, it didn't happen. And of course, if you know anything about the oil business, you know it couldn't happen. And of course, President Trump understands it as well. And, you know, he's playing a masterful strategic game to try and neutralize and defund the Iranian regime, which for 47 years has financed and funded terrorism. And at home, all of the detractors are trying to create economic scare tactics that will be effective in the midterm elections in November. Well, they're not working because the numbers aren't cooperating. And the latest, the story du jour, of course, is that the Cushing tanks are draining to the point where there's nothing left but tar. And I've talked about what is Cushing. Well, Cushing is a small town in Oklahoma. And it's a cool little town. It's a typical Western town. I've been there, driven through it, marveled at it. Not much to see except massive numbers of big old oil storage tanks. And for reasons of based in history, historic reasons, the Cushing site was where the Oklahoma oil industry, a very powerful industry in Oklahoma, and the Pershing came together, and Dallas and East Texas, everybody kind of comes together in the central. And back in the olden days, they would fill the tanks, and then they would ship the oil to whoever had a NYMEX contract demanding delivery. And it was cumbersome. You had to ship the oil to Cushing, and then sit there, and contracts are trading in New York City, and all of a sudden somebody says, I've got the contract for delivery, 1 million barrels, next Tuesday at my refinery. Well, then they got to figure out how to get the oil out of the barrels and get it over to the refinery. But that was the state of the art back when the NYMEX was coming on board. It was back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and it was old school. It was just the way it was. It was a physical transfer point where if you had a NYMEX contract and you said, I need 1 million gallons right now, today's the day, today's settlement day, then the guy on the other side would say, good, go down to Cushing and pick it up and have fun hauling it. And that's how it would work. See, it was just kind of a thing because you had to have a settlement point for physical delivery, but it was never part of the total gross flow of oil from producers to refiners. And keep in mind, I've been talking about this all week, there's only one type of customer for crude oil in the whole world. It's not like you pull up barrels of oil and you sell to this customer and that customer. No, there's only one kind of customer that takes crude oil. It has value only to one kind of customer, and that is the refiners. Somebody who can take this barrel, 42 gallons of sticky, gooey stuff, pour it into their machine, and within 12 to 24 hours, out flows premium or unleaded or, you know, mid-grade or the cheap stuff I use. All of that is how the oil business works. See, so today, when the Cushing site exists, people realized a long time ago that there's no way you're going to pump billions of gallons of oil into these tanks in Cushing, Oklahoma, and then go pick it up and ship it to wherever your refinery is. They don't do that. They ship direct. If you're an oil producer, you got your own tanks and your steady flow, whether it's piped directly to the producer, the refiner, or it's trucked, even railroad cars that'll haul crude, but mostly by ship, and that's why they build the refineries along the waterways, because as the petroleum boats come in, and they load them right off at the dock, and into the refinery they go, and out comes the gasoline. All of that stuff has been compensated for. So the reason the prices are not reflecting this panic that Cushing is being drained to the bottom and the strategic petroleum reserve is being drained to the bottom is it's got nothing to do with the production of gasoline. So that's why the prices aren't moving. So all right, so what do you have these things for? Why is Cushing draining? Why is the strategic petroleum reserve draining? Why are we draining those down? Well, the vast majority of that drainage is being exported, and it's being exported at very high prices right now due to the war with Iran. Prices went up $100 a barrel, $114 a barrel, $110 a barrel. If you're sitting on $42 a barrel oil or $50 a barrel oil, and the price is $100, and you don't sell your $50 barrel of oil for $100 and take $100 or $50 profit, then you're probably going to lose your job, because your job is to run a profit-making business. And if you got cheap oil in those tanks and the world is willing to pay more than that oil is cost you, you sell it. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening. And, you know, from Cushing, that's a private business. And you would not, you know, no way would you sit there with $40 oil and watch the world go by at 100 and not push the sell button. You're not doing that. You would sell the oil, and that's what we're seeing. Because there's all sorts of mechanisms in place to settle oil contracts. You know, like I lectured earlier this week, the refiners are the most sophisticated oil buyers on earth, okay? Because they're the only people who buy oil. And the producers are the most sophisticated producers of oil, but they've been well-trained by the refiners. What do you need? When do you need it? Where do you need it? And how much are you going to pay me? That's the model. So the whole delivery system for refineries is not at all dependent on Cushing. And I'll tell you, none of the speculators that are speculating in NYMEX futures contracts for petroleum, not a one of them wants to take physical delivery of a million gallons or a million barrels of crude oil. Because what are they going to do with it? They don't have a refinery. They're speculators. They're gambling, and they create liquidity within the contract markets. It's normal, just like pork bellies and wheat and corn and beans. It's all the same, okay? So what we're seeing is the mechanisms at work. The people who own the oil are selling it into a global market as fast as they can to grab that profit, and they were happier yesterday at 80 than they are at 75. I mean, certainly. I mean, this is how much oil can we sell and how fast can we at least get it under contract for delivery? That's why Cushing is draining. It's a business decision, and it has nothing to do with the refineries, because no refiner is going to rely upon a bunch of tanks in Oklahoma when you're sitting down in the Gulf in Houston or wherever. Up here in the Midwest, you got 7 refineries around the Great Lakes. Yeah. Picking it up, you know, drive it up from Cushing. They don't do that. It's just, that's just not the model. So whenever you hear these stories of, oh, we're draining ourselves, you know, it's not affecting the price, because the industry is very sophisticated and figured it out. Okay, well, what about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve? Now, that's to protect America, right? Isn't that what that was all about? Well, yeah, Harry Truman back in the day said, you know, oil is becoming an important thing here. Back in the late 40s, they had people who are driving cars and trucks, and we ought to have a little set aside. So old Harry Truman, which is probably the last honest president we've ever had, or we've had since, set that up. And of course, when the Arab oil embargo happened in the 1970s, 71, 72, it became a really important thing, because the entire fleet of American mobility depended upon gasoline. Now, today we've got EV, we've got ethanol products, and we've got a more diverse fuel base. But back in the 70s, if you didn't have gasoline, you couldn't turn on your expensive car and drive anywhere. So they boosted up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to create a national buffer in case the OPEC gang shut us off again. And meanwhile, the American oil industry is growing and growing and growing, and shale industry is growing, Canadian is growing, Mexico is growing. Well, we've got a strategic oil reserve, and of course, they're draining that. Well, why would we do that? Isn't that against our national interests? No, because we produce more oil than we need, and we export. We're the largest exporter in the world, so if we needed it, we could stop exporting it. But more importantly, we're sitting on, here it comes, $40 trillion in national debt, and our beloved Congress, the voice of the people, can't stop spending more money than they take in at $2.5 trillion annual deficit. So if you are the Treasury Secretary of the United States, and you think, man, we got all this cheap oil sitting underground, we can sell it at a good price in the global market to try and pay off some of that debt and cover that deficit so I don't have to keep issuing bonds, will you call the Secretary of the Energy Department and you say, you know what, start selling that oil and grab that profit, because I need it so we don't have to keep putting more and more and more government bonds into the great financial marketplace. And that's what's happening. The United States government is pocketing the difference. They're selling oil that they paid a lot less money for into a global market and making bank, and that bank, at least according to the U.S. Treasury, is being used to close that $2.5 trillion deficit that Congress insists that the only way our democracy will survive is to continue spending $2.5 trillion more than we take in. And keep in mind, our $5 trillion revenue take every year, that's federal revenue take, over 25% of it is going to pay debt on the 40 $4 trillion in national debt right now. It's paying interest. That's the interest. So you really have only have about $4 trillion, and they're spending 7.5, and that's really where we are. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me one bit that the guys in Cushing, you're making money like there's no tomorrow, and our Treasury Secretary is wise enough to know that we're not leaving $40 oil in the ground when we can sell it for $100. And that's what's happening, and that's why we're not seeing a crisis, and we shan't. And keep in mind, with demand disintegration as well, more and more people are driving electric vehicles, and of course we've got ethanol, you got E85. We have choices today, and that again is the demand destruction. That means that we're more able to absorb a supply shock, especially from you know, the Hormuz was only 20% of oil. That wasn't the world's greatest supply of oil. It was back in the 40s, not today. And that's what President Trump's been trying to do: move the economic pendulum away from the Middle East, defund the crazy terrorists, and make the rest of the world a much richer place. And then if the Middle East wants to join on some level of civilized society, they're welcome to come back in. And that's the beauty of watching his game. I would suggest you reread The Art of the Deal if you really want to know what he's doing. Anyway, I am out of time for today. Please go to worldviewfoundation.com and make a donation. Keep us broadcasting free of charge. And certainly look at the vault and subscribe to the vault for yourself and your friends and relatives. And let's grow this ministry. Anyway, have a great afternoon. I shall talk to you tomorrow, probably with a necktie on. Take care. Bye.